Hello and welcome to The Travel Diaries. Thank you for being here. I'm Holly Rubenstein, I'm a travel and entertainment journalist, and here each week I'll be speaking to a very special guest about their adventures around the world and the travel experiences and destinations that have shaped their lives. This week I'm joined by a bit of a national treasure. He's a chef, an author, a presenter, most notably of one of my childhood favourites, Ready Steady Cook. You guessed it, it's Ainsley Harriott. Now, if you've watched Ainsley on one of his cooking shows, or even when he was recently a contestant on Strictly Come Dancing, you'll know he's a larger-than-life personality, and on that, he doesn't disappoint today. We sing, we laugh, and we chat about the colourful cuisine of the Caribbean. All that and more coming up on The Travel Diaries. Harriott, welcome to the Travel Diaries podcast. Thank you so much for being here. How are you?
I'm delighted. I'm really well, actually.
I was doing a bit of research for our chat, and I have to admit, I had no idea about your other career before becoming the TV chef that we know and love as a pop star.
Oh, pop star.
World party. I mean, it sounds like it really should be the new theme tune for my podcast, The Travel Diaries.
Oh, that's brilliant, yeah. Get out of the streets, we're having a world party. Yeah, you can dance with your lover. She don't have to go home. Get out of the streets. Isn't it wonderful?
Okay, I think we should just basically re-record it.
I think we should re-record that. In fact, I was just recently released Caribbean Kitchen, or Kitchen Calypso. And which is at Kitchen Calypso, which has recently been released, so people can download that. That's fantastic.
We're going to go on a journey through the 8 chapters of your life's travel diaries.
Okay.
And I imagine they're going to be very, very exciting, given
how
widely travelled you are.
All right, then.
So let's start at the very beginning, and that's chapter 1, which is your earliest travel memory.
Earliest travel memory. I think it's probably got to be the 66, the year that I was not in England. So I have no recollection of the World Cup. And I was a youngster then. I was maybe 8 or 9. And my parents, well, not so much my parents, my dad was here working. He was doing a season at Blackpool. He was a pianist, Chester Harriott, and he used to do all the wonderful entertainment shows. And he sent me a family, my mum, my eldest sister, Jacqueline, my brother Chester, and myself, first to New York to meet my grandparents, and then on to Jamaica. So the entire summer holiday, that 6 weeks that we broke up from school, we spent away, meeting my grandfather, who was alive then, and he just had an operation, sadly lost his sight. But I remember going up to him and said, "Oh, Granddad, can I have some money, please, to go and buy a fizzy drink, like a Pepsi or Coke or something like that?" He said, "God damn it, no grandson of mine going to put money in American man pocket. Go and pick 3 or 4 fresh lime from the tree, mix it with sugar and ice water, and make yourself a fresh lemonade. Get out of my sight." And me and my brother would look at each other and say, "Can't see." It was terrible. But by the time we left the Caribbean, by the time we left Jamaica, there wasn't a lime left on the tree. He was so right. Those beautiful limes that when you squeeze them, you know, sometimes now we squeeze limes and nothing comes out. No juice comes out. There, you squeeze the lime and it's just like, you know, it's like a volcano, not a volcano that erupts, but it's just like a waterfall of beautiful lime juice. And of course, then you mixed it with the sugar and you scraped the ice off a big block, mixed it in with it, and then a little bit of water, and you had the instant lemonade. It was divine.
That does sound divine.
Oh, it was great.
Chapter 2 is the first place that you fell in love with. What would that be?
I think as a child, the first place I fell in love with was Kew Gardens, because I remember my dad being away an awful lot, but we all used to go off as a family to Kew Gardens, and but it was very much a sort of spring kind of summer thing. Mum loved going down there. We'd take the chest full of food and we'd all sit around and play as a family. It's the only time I remember being on my dad's shoulders and walking around and trying to, you know, pluck leaves from high trees and stuff like that. So that was one of my early memories. But on a personal level, I think the greatest I've ever felt and the freedom that encapsulated me was when I went skiing with the school and we're in Niederau in Austria. And I took this cable car up, never done that before. And it was like I was going up into the clouds, like I was going up to heaven almost. And then getting up there and just learning how to ski, you know. So it was quite a frightening prospect. If anybody skis, they know what it's like. Mm. And then getting to the top and this expanse of white mountains, and it was just the most amazing thing I'd ever seen. And we went above the clouds and it was blue up there. It was like another land that you were in. And I'll never ever forget that feeling. And that was my fix for skiing. And
yeah.
I've been a skier ever since.
Really?
Yeah. And that was 50 years ago, believe it or not. So it was the most wonderful feeling.
It's very, 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 very special. Mm.
Chapter 3 is the trip where you learn the most about yourself. What do you think that might be?
I think that's, you know, learning the most about yourself. It's quite a difficult subject. It's quite difficult because people, sometimes we're not even conscious of the fact that we're learning anything about ourselves. We're not aware of it. And it's when you come back and reflect that you suddenly realise, wow, I discovered that, you know, I know a little bit more about me now. And a lot of people don't realise that until mid-age sometimes. I was very fortunate to go on one of those Interrail travel things, which you have to be under 24 or something to do it, you know. Mm-hmm. And I actually left my job. I was cooking in the Shrine Palace Hotel, and I left that job to go travelling with my friend Charles. And wow, it was just made me realise how invaluable the friendship was, but more important, being away from having the comforts of home, being away from, he came from, I'm still very close to that Greek family actually, the Scudamores, but I was round their house, he was round at my house, we shared each other's life, the house was always clean, the food was always cooked, everything was provided for. This is the first time, even though he'd been to university and I was sort of busy sort of learning how to cook and stuff like that, but it's the first time we'd been away, separated for a whole month from our people, from our environment, mm-hmm. and discovering, you know, that beautiful thing about, you know, they're saying that silence, you can always tell when you're very close with someone because silence is not uncomfortable.
Yeah.
That moment when you're both there, you can look at each other, you can have a looking out the window, you can look back at your mate, you smile at each other. You don't have to say anything. There's just that bond. And, you know, even though he lives in Australia now, married an Australian girl, and his children have grown up very similar to mine, you know, children in their late 20s, early 30s. When we see each other within 5 minutes, not even within 5 minutes, we're just there. You know, I'm a people person. Mm. So it's really lovely when you meet people and you're talking and stuff. It doesn't matter where you are in the world. You know, I've been to places where we don't even speak the same language, but we communicate, you know, through food. And it's a wonderful thing. There's a real happiness, a real joy, a real kind of spirit between people. And we're human beings, you know. As my dad would say, don't carry on as if your shit don't stink. We are lithium, you know.
Yeah.
So true.
What culture would you say food you connected the most with?
What culture? I'm born here. I'm born in England. I'm British. And I'm come from multicultural Britain, perhaps because I'm living in London and I grew up with lots of people whose parents were immigrant like mine, immigrants that came over. I had the San Filippos, the Italian family who lived up the road. I was always at their house. I had my friend Asif Osman, the Indian family. I was always at their house. The Scudamores I've already mentioned, Greek family, I was at their house. The Auntie G and Uncle William Wong, Chinese, I was at their house a lot. These all went to church. Next door was Ina and Andrea Stevens, an English family. And Mr. and Mrs. Clark were two doors down, Polish family. So I'm giving you a sense of this wonderful mix of different people and the way they celebrated each other's friendship was inviting each other to their house, you know, because that was the way of extending your friendship. And And it meant that I was trying all these different foods from a very, very young age. Mm. So to say, what food did I identify with? I think I identified with people more than food.
That's really interesting.
And if you identified with people, you feel comfortable, you trust someone. And my mother would reciprocate that.
Yeah, you say in your book how your house was always kind of alive with Jamaican flavours and people coming round to eat the food. Tell me a bit about that.
Well, it was my father, again, being in the position of being in the entertainment business, meant that when he wasn't working and he was at home, his mates who... most of them worked in the evening, you know, unless you do a summer season somewhere. Most of his mates did a cabaret event somewhere, or, you know, cabaret venue somewhere. So it meant that, people came around to the house, and it was really lovely. And it was, my mother would love it because that's what she was all about. She loved the idea of, you know, entertaining, and seeing her handing this stuff out and everyone smiling and be happy. And I've said that in the book. That's why you become a cook. You kind of think, people are happy and they're just eating. And I think no wonder my sister, she's only recently retired a couple of years now. She taught cooking at school for years, home economics. My brother, he's always in the kitchen. Every time you go around there, he said, "Hello, I'm in the kitchen." I said, "Yeah, all right." He's either in the kitchen or in the garden. You know, and I think there's something really quite refreshing about that. And, you know, it's what we're passing on. It's we're not even aware that we're doing it.
Yeah, it's a legacy.
But, you know, it's legacy. It's kind of, you know, it's just part of our lineage, really, you know.
So nice.
Yeah.
Chapter 4 is your all-time favourite destination.
All-time favourite destination. Ah, thought about this a lot, and I say a lot in the fact that it's one of those things that we find ourselves sometimes chatting with your friends and say, where do you really love? What's your favourite? You know, it's like, what's your favourite film? Well, it depends on your mood, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. What's your favourite song? Depends on one's mood. Depends whether you're in love, you're happy, you're sad. Do you know what I mean? It's all about how we feel, that intimacy and what's inside us. And I think that one of the places that I went to, as far as travel was concerned, that really kind of made me think, this is very exciting, I've got to come back here. And that was Buenos Aires in Argentina. The wide streets, all the European influence. One minute the British had it, then the French had it, then the Italians had it. Do you know, all these different influences down there that were represented in the architecture of each train station. Beautiful wide streets with six lanes or more each side, you know, and then suddenly disappearing down to the quarters where people were dancing and doing the beautiful tango and stuff like that. And at one point, I couldn't believe this man was sitting down with his wife, went up to another woman, danced with her passionately, and almost like they were the most passionate lovers going, and then said thank you in a very polite way, walked back to his wife, and she was chatting. That was just, it was just cool. It was just okay. And I fell in love with that because I think that's really representing of, you know, you can give out love. You can be warm and considerate with people. It doesn't mean to say, I want to run off and get married with you or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Or I want to live with you for the rest of my life. Perhaps that's why I love songs like, you know, the old Mills Brothers that my mother used to play, you know. Be my life's companion and you'll never grow old. You've got to stay young. No, you'll never grow old. People say you're old when you get to 33. It ain't gonna happen to me. No, and it ain't gonna happen to you. Oh, be my life's companion and you'll never grow. And there you go.
That was brilliant. The one line that sticks out to me, though, is growing old at 33. They picked out quite a low age there that I'm finding a bit distressing.
I know you're finding it a little bit stressful. But basically, people in those days, if you listen to the song, it's about... people say you're old at 33 because it's about marriage. It's about finding a life's companion. Mm-hmm. And they think they've got to 33. If you think about when the Mills Brothers recorded that, probably back in the 70s or something like that, you know, people got married really young.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, everybody, you were done and dusted with your kids by the time you were 23, 24. Mm. And so it's changed a lot by now. I should say, people will say you're old when you get to 53, but I think that's a bit too old.
We could change the lyrics.
So the Mills Brothers, lovely. Songs like that just kind of, bring it home to me about, special moments, I suppose. Going back, Buenos Aires, what a city. And I love the food there. I love the, I like the people a lot. And so that's somewhere that I love. That could change, because suddenly you meet someone, you're with the right person, or you might be with your loved one, your children or your grandchildren or something like that, and that can be replaced. But for the moment, it has to be that.
When I book holidays, I book them based on maybe the beauty of the destination or maybe a beautiful hotel. Are you guided by the food?
Partly by the food, because I think the food is a way of telling you a lot about the culture of the people, and the way they are, quite often the way they look, is very much reflected in what they eat. It's no surprise that when you go to some of these Asian destinations and they can smell the dairy on you, they don't like it because they don't use cream and milk and butter the way that we do. They replace it with something else, so it's kind of interesting that. But yeah, I think hotels, certainly as you get a little bit older, become more important. I don't want to go off and do that camping thing anymore, or staying somewhere rough. I don't like bugs sort of all over my bedroom. I quite understand that I'm visiting their domain. They're not coming to my domain. So, if you have to sleep with a snake under the bed, so be it. But
but we'd all rather not.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
How's it? My name is Les Eddie. I'm a tour leader with Explore. Come on, let me show you something. Oh, careful. Can you see it? Oh, trust me. It can see you. There, between the trees. It's not every day you get to see a rhino on a walk. I guess not everyone is taken to the right places, but you will be if you explore. For global adventures, search exploreworldwide.com and don't just travel. Explore.
Today's episode is supported by Airbnb, and what a great partnership. If you're a longtime listener of the Travel Diaries, you probably know that we love to put our home on Airbnb when we're traveling. Like last autumn when we took the family to Puglia, we put our house on Airbnb when otherwise it would just be sitting empty, which meant that we earned some extra money that went towards our flights and maybe some souvenirs too. Hosting on Airbnb for us is also a family affair. My mum is an Airbnb superhost. She regularly has guests stay in her little chalet in her garden, and my dad, who lives in France, has his home on Airbnb so that when he comes back to visit, he is earning some extra money while he's away. My dad is 80 and he only started hosting on Airbnb a couple of years ago. So hopefully that shows you how straightforward the whole experience is. He found it so easy to list his house that I think he's got all his pals signing up now too. And it really is straightforward. You can choose whether you want to rent out your entire home or just some rooms. Alex and I, for example, list our spare bedroom, and that works really well for us. So if you have a trip coming up and you want to earn some extra money while you're away, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.co.uk/host. That's airbnb.co.uk/host. Thank you to Airbnb.
Chapter 5 is your hidden gem, a place that you really love that maybe some people don't know is so great.
I think most people would like to think they have a hidden gem that nobody knows about, but for me, it's just, I've discovered quite a few walking with my dog, and I quite like it locally because if it's a little bit of a hidden gem, you don't want to have to get on a plane for 18 hours to catch that hidden gem.
True.
Do you know, I think it's something that you want to regularly see, and that could be Wimbledon Common for me when, in the middle of the or late morning, early afternoon, when hardly anybody's up there, and you're walking with your dog, and there's not a soul in sight. There's a, I think it's Carnavaro Park, which is up near Wimbledon too, right on the top of Wimbledon Hill. There's a park that used to be someone's home and family used to live there, and you walk into the park, you think it's nothing. And so Hotel Duvin is right next door. And there's an entrance to the park, and you walk down there. It's wonderful. There's an open-air theatre there, which they put on plays in the summer. I think they've got Midsummer Night's Dream down there. But fabulous place to walk your dog.
And how about for your new show and your book? You have the best job in the world travelling around the Caribbean. I mean, the dream. Some people lump the Caribbean into just one lump of islands when they, as you say, are so diverse. So were there any places that you kind of feel don't get the recognition that, or a place that doesn't get the recognition it deserves in the Caribbean?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Somewhere that doesn't get the recognition. I think everyone has its, island has its own identity. Mm. You know, that you're right, people do, you know, say, right, they put a stamp on it, Caribbean, or they put a stamp on Africa. Well, look how many countries there are there. Put a stamp on India. It's 53 different or 55 different states in India. Yeah. And each of them have their own kind of style of cooking, their own curries. And then it's almost like putting a stamp on Europe and saying, oh, it's Europe. Well, look how different the Italians are, the French are, the Germans are, the Swiss are. We are, and long may it last. But I think that the Caribbean is very much in that same mould. It's each island has its own warmth and its own style of food and people with their own characters, their own personalities. And it's lovely to talk to them. They have warmth in their smile. They, you know, there was a lovely thing that an old gentleman told me once. He said, when we communicate with people and you look, most of the time they only allow you to see their eyes. He said, and that will tell you a lot about them. But if they smile at you, that tells you a little bit more. If they show their teeth, that reveals so much more. And if they laugh with you, open their mouth, they're opening themselves up to you even more. So you're getting different layers of people allowing you in. And when you get that ha 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 and you're sharing that moment with each other, it's almost like the chemistry, it's okay. You've broken down the barriers because the laughter's there. You think of tight-lipped people just looking at you, they're not revealing anything, not saying anything, just opening up. Fantastic. Yeah. And that is what you get in the Caribbean, a lot of, yeah, man, it's funny where you're from, you know. And it happens quite a lot. And I think that's the warmth. That's what I certainly felt. Is there only one particular island? I think, again...
Is it like picking between, like, your children?
Well, it is, because I'm a people person. And I think if you've got that people connection, then I think you naturally just warm to people. It doesn't matter where you are. I have relatives in Barbados. I have relatives in Jamaica, obviously. So you might think it's easier. But I met some wonderfully warm people in the small island of Dominica, which was so raw, it was unbelievable. And they say that if Christopher Columbus went back to the Caribbean, Archipelago, I think they call that, the group of islands, the only place that he would recognise would be Dominica. Because it's so untouched. Mm. And there's still trees there that are 400 years old that were there when Christopher Columbus first arrived there, all those hundreds of years ago. Brilliant. You know, no traffic lights there. And lovely, warm moments, like when the guy's driving you around the street, taking you to your hotel. He said, I know about here is the police station, but we call it the police hotel. I said, well, why is that then? He said, well, they don't do nothing. No crime, no traffic offence, nothing. He says, so they just sit down all day like them in the hotel. So I thought it was very lovely.
I love that. Chapter 6 is the place you'd never go back to. What's been most memorable for the wrong reasons?
Well, do you know what? It's not land. It's not terra firma.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives you an indication of where I'm going. It's the ocean. I'm not very good in the sea. I swim. Mm-hmm. As long as I can put my feet on the bottom.
Yeah.
I'm fine with it. But I have been on trips before, and I've been on boats and people say dive off the edge or jump off the edge and go into the sea. Well, it just don't mix with me. As soon as I get in, for some reason, I panic. So it's an area that I've decided as I've got older that I just don't want to visit because I respect it. I so respect it. And dear old David Attenborough has brought it even closer to us now that, you know, what exists, what is in there. And it's quite frightening sometimes, you know, for me. I just, it's a place that I don't want to go back to. I'm perfectly happy walking on a sandy beach and going and doing a little bit of swimming and stuff. But there's nowhere on land that I've been to. There's places which I've been disappointed with. But if there are people there, that I'm not disappointed with it because they're the people give you something, you know? You know, whether that be Newfoundland or somewhere like Ushuaia in Argentina on a cold, miserable day. You know, Ushuaia is the, I think, it's the most southern city. The next you've got Antarctica after that. I believe that's the case, which can be pretty miserable. And some people are looking very cold and down. And you go in and you sit down with them and they give you a bit of their local kind of vodka or something like that. And you're smiling and it's all over. The ocean doesn't give you that. The sea doesn't give you that. It's unforgiving and it can be wonderful if you're a nautical genius. I ain't going back in that water.
Chapter 7 is your next big adventure. Well, we're here talking about one amazing adventure, which doesn't involve actually travel now, but it did with your fabulous book and your series. So tell us a bit more about that.
Well, the, you know, making a series like Ainsley's Caribbean Kitchen was wonderfully exciting because I didn't ever imagine that I'd be visiting those places in the Caribbean. I think you go on holiday, and I'm like anybody else on holiday. I love a book. I love to switch off from it all. 1 or 2 days adventure can be very, very exciting. But generally, that's about it. I stay put.
You need a busy life, so you want to relax.
I stay pretty put. But then going to places like Grenada, going to Dominica, going to even St. Lucia that I'd been to before, but seeing parts, starting to understand the culture, starting to understand the history of the place, what took place, why it has formed, why it is the shape and the style and the character of people. It's like that. That's the foundation of the place, and that's where it all started. That's where the roots began to come through, and they've come through and, you know, sprung up towards the sky, like everything does when it grows, you know. But you think, wow, now I understand it. It's not there before. You close yourself off a little bit. You just want that sun to shine, rub in your factor 15 and have a lovely meal, have the occasional rum punch and you're happy. Yeah. You know, there's so much more to discover.
What I loved about your book was how it brought to life. It would be so resonant for travel lovers because it brings to life all the different Caribbean islands and their unique elements and the unique food that comes with them.
Oh, yeah. The food that comes with it and making it a lot more interesting. You know, food not just about, as I said, it's not just about jerk chicken. Everyone's got a jerk chicken recipe or a sauce. And there's so much more. And, of course, the diversity, you know, not forgetting the vegan and vegetarians, incorporating some of those wonderful flavours too for them, you know. Of course, there's the meat and the fish. That's just natural. But for me, life is a mixture of everything. And I think the book reflects that. Wonderful colours. I think when people open it, it's going to be that kind of... It's a sunshine book. And people say, you know, what would be your wish list or something like that? And I said, well,
that's my next question.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
That's our final chapter.
Okay.
Well, shall we get, let's head on to it.
Okay.
So that is chapter 8. And that is, what is at the top of your wish list?
Do you know what? I've got to say, what is on my wish list? I've done so much. I've travelled so many different destinations. I've met so many beautiful, beautiful people, and I want to continue to do that in my life. And the only way I can continue to do that, my wish list, would be to retain my health, keep my health, keep myself healthy and happy. And I'm not brilliant, you know. Sometimes I go out with friends and I end up having too many glasses of wine, or we end up having smoking a bit, and I know I shouldn't do all these things. I know it's not perfect, But at the same time, when I go and see my chiropractor and he said, I wish people were like you, Ainsley. He said, you come in with such a refreshing air of energy and life, he said, and that will keep you going, mate. Don't worry. Mm-hmm. He said, because it's all about how you deal with life, how you approach life, how you respect your fellow human beings, you know. Yeah. It's all that. And if you give that love and that affection, it reciprocates. It comes back to you. And, you know, I've been in situations where people say, I wouldn't talk to them. They're really angry. I go and speak. I see no anger in them. I see no anguish. But if you know, it's almost like you're branding people before. What's that lovely expression? Don't judge a book by its cover. As my late mother would have said. And it's so true. You meet people and you just give them a chance. Mm-hmm. And so, sorry to say, it's not a destination. It's about a value of life, a health value of life.
Words to live by. Oh, Ainsley, Harriet, those were your travel diaries. What an absolute pleasure. Thank you so
thank
much.
You, thank you. It's been great.
Great to meet
great,
you.
Thank you.
That was Ainsley Harriet. What a character. I implore you to go onto YouTube and watch the music video for World Party. You won't regret it. If you've enjoyed what you've heard today, then please subscribe, leave a nice rating, or even write a review. It all helps other people to discover the podcast. And come and find me on Instagram. I'm at Holly Rubenstein. I'd love to hear from you. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week. Today's episode is supported by Airbnb, and what a great partnership. If you're a longtime listener of the Travel Diaries, you probably know that we love to put our home on Airbnb when we're traveling. Like last autumn when we took the family to Puglia, we put our house on Airbnb when otherwise it would just be sitting empty, which meant that we earned some extra money that went towards our flights and maybe some souvenirs too. Hosting on Airbnb for us is also a family affair. My mum is an Airbnb superhost. She regularly has guests stay in her little chalet in her garden. And my dad, who lives in France, has his home on Airbnb so that when he comes back to visit, he is earning some extra money while he's away. My dad is 80 and he only started hosting on Airbnb a couple of years ago. So hopefully that shows you how straightforward the whole experience is. He found it so easy to list his house that I think he's got all his pals signing up now too. And it really is straightforward. You can choose whether you want to rent out your entire home or just some rooms. Alex and I, for example, list our spare bedroom and that works really well for us. So if you have a trip coming up and you want to earn some extra money while you're away, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.co.uk/host. That's airbnb.co.uk/host. Thank you to Airbnb.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.